Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Quick Hits, Relic Pilgrimage, a relic of Blessed Michael McGivney, the founder of the Knights of Columbus, will be available for veneration from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. veneration and 6 p.m. Mass today at Holy Redeemer Parish, 2633 Conover Avenue, followed by Knights of Columbus, Exemplification of Charity, Unity, and Fraternity. Visit KOFCStarkAgency.com. National Kidney Month Celebration. Odessa Regional Medical Center will hold a news conference at 4:30 p.m. today in the Permian Basin Kidney Center, 410 North Hancock Avenue, to celebrate National Kidney Month. The guest speaker, Mark Scotch, recipient of USA Today's Humankind Triumph of the Year Award. Visit markscotch.com. Commitment to Mental Health. Odessa College invites the public and all OC students to commit to mental health, a come-and-go event from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. today at the Salisbury Campus Center. The public service wellness event will include guest speakers, community groups, campus resources, and more. Guest speakers will address the following topics: 5 p.m., stress relief and coping mechanisms, the Odessa College Psychology Department, 6 p.m., Talk Saves Lives, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, 7 p.m., Mental Health Effects of Domestic Violence. The crisis center of the event is free to the public and OC students. Feasibility study. The City of Odessa Parks and Recreation Department has scheduled a feasibility study community meeting at 6:30 p.m. today at Sherwood Community Center, 4819 Everglade Avenue. The meeting is to discuss a potential new sports complex. To place your feedback, go to bit.ly/3s60eke. Visit tinyurl.com/3pn36ZHH. Spring Concert. The Odessa College A Cappella Choir and Vocal Ensemble will present their spring concert, Nuestra Voz, at 7 p.m. today at the Jax Rogers Fine Arts Center, OC Campus, 201 West University Boulevard. The concert will feature different styles of Latin American music. Visit tinyurl.com/2D4VEF3V. Buse principal placed on leave. The principal of Buse Elementary School, Jim Workman, has been placed on administrative leave pending an investigation of an incident Friday. Ector County ISD Chief Communications Officer Mike Adkins said, "Because it is an ongoing investigation and a personal matter, we are unable to give you any additional information at this time." Parks and Recreation to hold sports complex feasibility study meetings. The City of Odessa Parks and Recreation Department and the Quality of Life Committee will conduct engagement meetings for the feasibility study for a sports complex. These meetings will take place 6:30 p.m. Wednesday at Lawndale Community Center, located at 9201 Rainbow Drive, and at 6:30 p.m. Thursday at Nimitz Middle School Cafeteria, located at 4500 Maple Avenue. The meeting scheduled for Tuesday at Sherwood Community Center has been canceled. ORMC host famed Oregon Trail cyclist. Odessa Regional Medical Center is celebrating National Kidney Month with guest speaker, living kidney donor and recipient of the USA Today's Humankind Triumph of the Year Award winner, Mark Scotch. Scotch is scheduled to speak at 4:30 p.m. Tuesday at the Permian Basin Kidney Center. Scotch, 67, is a living kidney donor and well known for his cycling journeys along the Oregon Trail. Scotch has made several cross-country trips since his kidney donation in 2020 and works to promote kidney health, living donor awareness, and post-donation functionality. We are very excited to have Mr. Scotch here with us. Anand Reddy, MD, and Asif Ansari, MD, said in the press release, "March is National Kidney Month, and we can think of no better way to spread awareness about the need for living kidney donors than having Mark here in Odessa. Scotch's 5th Oregon Trail will officially begin March 9th in Lubbock at World Kidney Day. He plans to bike 1,500 miles over the next 6 weeks, finally ending his journey in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Mark's wife, Lynn Scotch, will be in attendance as well. She became a living kidney donor in January. Reddy, director of Permian Kidney Center, and Ansari, the center's consultant nephrologist, said they hope the event would raise awareness of kidney health and the need for donors here in the Permian Basin. Approximately 3,000 new patients are added monthly to the National Kidney Waiting List, and 13 people die each day waiting for a kidney to become available. The Scotches said they hope their advocacy demonstrates to potential donors just how fulfilling life can be after donating a kidney. The Oregon Trail is all about generating awareness of the need for kidney donors, especially living kidney donors. But it's also about showing people that even with one kidney, you can still lead a full, active life, even if those activities are sustained and vigorous," Scotch said in a press release. Man arrested in connection to aggravated assault. An Odessa man was arrested late Thursday night after his girlfriend told police he threatened her with a switchblade. According to an Odessa Police Department report, dispatchers received a 911 disturbance call from the 1300 block of Boatwright Street, and when officers arrived, a 27-year-old woman, said Christopher James Bolin, 26, grabbed her by the hair, held a switchblade knife close to her body, and gave her commands to ensure she cooperated. Bolin admitted grabbing the woman's hair, but said he quickly realized it was the wrong thing to do and let go, the report stated. Christopher flipped open the switchblade knife, but did not stab her with it, the report stated. Bolin was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a second-degree felony, punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison. Bolin remains in the Ector County Jail on a $30,000 surety bond and a parole violation charge. Ector County District Court records show Bolin was placed on deferred adjudication in a drug case in May 2018, violated the conditions of his plea agreement, in part by getting arrested for evading arrest, and was sent to prison for 5 years in June 2019. He was paroled in August 2020 with a parole ending date of January 2024, according to the Texas Department of Public Safety. Woman accused of stabbing boyfriend at motel. A 54-year-old Odessa woman was arrested Friday morning after her boyfriend accused her of stabbing him, and a fellow motel dweller told officers she forced her way into her room to avoid getting arrested. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a 59-year-old man called 911 from the Odessa Motel Inn on East 2nd Street around 9:20 a.m. to report being stabbed. When officers arrived, the man showed them a laceration between his right index finger and thumb and a scratch mark on the right side of his forehead. The man told officers he and Charlene Johnson had been arguing since 3 a.m. when his former girlfriend called him, the report stated. He told officers she didn't want to pursue charges, but he did want Johnson removed from his room. Officers went to the man's room, but no one answered. According to the report, a short time later, a woman came out of the room directly above, screaming, "She's up here." The woman told officers Johnson forced herself into her room and offered to pay her money to allow her to hide, but she ended up pepper spraying Johnson instead. Johnson told officers she acted in self-defense after being choked by her intoxicated boyfriend. Johnson was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a second-degree felony, punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison. She was released from the Ector County Jail Sunday after posting a $25,000 surety bond. Seminole resident dies in rollover. A 20-year-old Seminole resident was killed in a one-vehicle rollover crash Saturday morning, according to the Texas Department of Public Safety. Carlos Isaac Perez Loera was traveling north on County Road 251 in a Chevrolet Equinox when he disregarded the stop sign at County Road 214, traveled through the intersection, and rolled in a pasture. Perez Loera, who was not wearing a seatbelt, was thrown from the vehicle and pronounced dead at the scene of the crash, which happened shortly after 7 a.m., according to DPS.
Is it too late to buy a long-term care policy? By Tony King. Dear Tony, my brother recently had to move out of his house into an assisted living facility because he broke his hip and is unable to live on his own. The monthly cost of the facility is about $4,500 per month, and his adult children are having to help him financially. Is it too late to buy him a long-term care policy? He is 69, and except for his hip issue, his health is decent. Please advise what his options are. Thank you. Leslie from Tyler, Texas. Leslie, your brother is in a bad situation. Due to his health issues, he will most likely not qualify for a long-term care policy. He will have to spend down his retirement and savings to have Medicaid assist him in paying for assisted living / nursing home care. We are noticing more long-term care issues at the Tony Says office because many people are waiting until they are retiring past 65 to apply for a traditional long-term care policy. By then, the premium is unaffordable for their retirement budget, or they cannot qualify due to health issues. America needs to be aware that the cost of long-term care is projected to rise from an average nursing home yearly cost of $115,000 in 2023 to over $155,000 per year in 10 years, and the estimated yearly cost to be $207,000 in 20 years. Assisted living costs less, with 2023 cost average at $57,000 per year, projected to rise in 10 years to $77,000 per year for 2033. In 20 years, the average assisted living cost will be $103,000 per year. The insurance industry has designed new products for Americans who are concerned about long-term care. Below are various long-term care options. 1. Traditional long-term care. The younger you are, the lower the premiums will be. Look for a long-term care policy while you are younger and in good health. 2. Life and annuity policies. Many life/annuity insurance policies have a provision or a rider for long-term care. You can receive a certain amount of long-term care with your life/annuity policy's face amount. 3. Aid and attendance benefits. The VA can help veterans with long-term care needs. There are billions available for long-term care pension money just waiting for qualified veterans to apply for their aid and attendance benefits. You need to have a long-term care issue to qualify. Recently, I had my own mother qualified for this benefit. Currently, an at-home care aide is assisting in my mother's daily care. Thank you, VA, for this great service for our veterans and spouses. 4. Medicaid. Check to see if you can qualify for Medicaid. One must spend down one's assets to qualify. Do not forget the 5-year income/asset look-back period and MERP, the Medicaid Estate Recovery Program. The state can place a lien on the beneficiary's estate for the amount of money the state paid for nursing home and medical care. Over the next 10 years, 10,000 baby boomers per day will turn 65. Many of them feel they have enough in their 401k to pay for a catastrophic illness and therefore are not concerned with long-term care planning. They do not realize that in 20 years, when their health is failing, their savings, including 401k and other investments, could be wiped out because they failed to plan. planning for long-term care is best done sooner rather than later. For a Medicare or long-term care checkup, email info@tonysays.com or call 832-519-8664. You can now visit www.seniorresource.com/Medicare moments to listen to Tony's Medicare Moments podcast and get other information for boomers/seniors. Tony's Medicare Survival Guide Advanced Edition, available at www.tonysays.com. District Focusing on Attendance by Ruth Campbell. Attendance for Ector County ISD is no longer a laughing matter, as it's hurting their bottom line. The Board of Trustees recently approved a $13 million budget adjustment to stem the red that cropped up due to low attendance rates. Chief Financial Officer Deborah Otmers said funding for the general fund is from average daily attendance. ECISD gets money for the different demographics that come to school. The actual revenue is a combination of property taxes collected, and then the state makes up the difference to the amount we are allowed, Otmers said in an email. If a district is property wealthy, like MISD, their property taxes are too much, so they send money back to the state. We are not in that situation, Otmers said. As of February 10th, ECISD's attendance rate was 91.3%. Last year, it was 89.7%. Randolph said he thinks the district loses about $600,000 per percentage point that it's down. The whole process starts with three unexcused absences. It triggers a warning letter that goes to the parent. That's required by law. We have to send that out if there are three unexcused within a four-week period. That goes out via text message and email, and then a phone call, said Director of Community Support Services Scott Randolph, who is based at the Community Outreach Center. When they get to three unexcused within a four-week period, they also get a final warning notice when the kids get five unexcused. Ideally, we'd like to have seven or fewer absences for the school year. That's what research shows is best, seven or fewer for the year. But when you start getting into trouble is when you get to 10 unexcused absences within a six-month period. That's when we file charges against the parents, he added. The students are not charged. This was changed several years ago. Texas was one of the last states that had truancy as a criminal offense on kids. We used to file tons of charges on 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds that have to go to court. There was a big group called the Texas Appleseed Project. They were trying to decrease the school-to-prison pipeline, is what they would call it. So you'd get lots of kids that would skip and have attendance problems. They were getting involved in the criminal justice system early. And then they would have thousands of dollars in fines by the time they turned 18, and then they couldn't get a driver's license because they couldn't pay off all those fines. It just snowballed, Randolph said. He said the organization wanted to end criminalization of truancy, so now there is the charge of parent contributing to non-attendance. The parents wind up in truancy court and municipal court. The next stage is criminal charges against the parent. There's really a system set up, and the changes are the last part of that system, and so before then, you could have already talked to people at the school. They should try to help you. They should try to meet with you, figure out what the reason is. If it keeps going, that's where the charges come in, he said. By the time it gets to that point, Randolph said, the parent should know what's coming. He noted that the Community Outreach Center has six specialists that make home visits to try to get the student back in school. The schools work at it, too. They'll send their principals out, really trying to reach out to families and get kids in school, Randolph said. The high schools are at 88 or 89% attendance, which he said is low. At the elementary level, it's more of a parental control issue. We deal more with parents at the elementary levels. Middle school, you start getting a little more into the equal culpability almost. The parents still have control, but the kids are starting to test boundaries, Randolph said. He added that attendance is low everywhere, but the two high schools have roughly 8,000 students total. So you're running 8,000 kids at 89%, and then these other kids are at about 93%. So it does hurt you a lot worse at the high school level, he said. Randolph said he usually gauges attendance by Reagan and Hayes elementary schools and the early college high schools that don't usually have attendance issues. If they drop, I can see that's usually a medical issue or COVID, he said. The early college high schools also have attendance rates ranging from 96 to 98%. Attendance last year was a mix of students not wanting to go to school and medical reasons. The state no longer provides funding for students who want to learn remotely as it did during COVID. I always like to put the caveat out there. We've got to 70 to 80% of our kids that do awesome. We just have 20% that struggle with this. But most districts only have 10%, so it's something we've got to keep working on, Randolph said. Some of the students that are not attending school are considered homeless under federal law. Randolph added that parents don't realize that education is sequential. For example, if a child misses algebra today, he's going to miss the concept that he's going to need tomorrow. Every day a child misses, the child falls further behind, and it gets more difficult for them. The Community Outreach Center can be reached at 432-456-8569.
Hello, my name is Susie Haynes, and I will be reading the Odessa American from Saturday, March 4th, Section A. Letters to the Editor. Kids need more to do. Oftentimes we hear people complain that kids don't go out to play anymore, but have they stopped to think that, at least here in Odessa, there's not exactly much for kids to do? It seems that some of the only places that younger Odessans can have fun is at the mall or Synergy, both of which are on the east side of town. So unless they have the means to get there, it's not exactly accessible for the youth in other parts of town. I understand that most of these places are privately owned, but there are arguably way more game rooms in Odessa than parks. And for most local kids, these parks can only be reached by automobile. Combine this with the 100-degree summers, and the reason we prefer to stay indoors seems clearer. I believe the city should aim to improve our current parks as well as establishing some indoor recreation centers. If Odessa had a few more indoor basketball, volleyball, and futsal courts, then kids would have a chance to stay active and socialize while spending little to no money themselves. I urge the city of Odessa to consider this. If they truly want to make the city more modern and livelier, then they should do this so us kids don't want to leave Odessa as soon as we can. Thank you, Jose Reese. TikTok full of dangers. With the recent ban of the social media application TikTok from use in county-owned buildings in Andrews County, I felt there was more of a story to be told, starting with the younger, more impressionable generation. TikTok has not only been dangerous to our national security, but also to mental health. In a section of the Odessa American from December 28, 2021, titled TikTok posts referencing violence raise anxiety levels at schools, it became more apparent to me that this application's content could have a negative impact on the general population as well as national security. Looking at the younger generation's use of this app, kids can get many hits of dopamine after watching short videos of cats or makeup montages. Though dopamine itself is not technically possible to become addicted to, it is possible to become addicted to activities that release dopamine. And after watching these activities, kids are likely to participate. The TikTok challenges, such as the Blackout Challenge and the Burning Pile Challenge, make it easily recognizable how these are dangerous for everyone. The dangers of this application and those like it to children should become known by every parent, and parents should keep a watchful eye on the content their children view. Thank you. Sincerely, Bryson Ramsey.
Some variants are more contagious than others. Dear Dr. Roach, the newest COVID variant is reputed to be less deadly but highly contagious. What precisely makes one virus variant more contagious than another virus variant? Is it structure, size, S? Answer, it's not size because all coronaviruses are just about the same size. It is certainly the structure, but a virus has several adaptations that make it more likely to be passed from one person to another. When conditions include a highly persistent virus within a certain population, then in general, those viruses that have mutations and enable better person-to-person transmission are more likely to be passed on. Similarly, the strains of viruses that don't kill their hosts, us, right away are more likely to be passed on. So we generally see more infectious, but not more deadly, virus variants, as infections stay around for years. Ideal conditions for a virus are lots of highly infectious viruses being produced for as long a period of time as possible, as well as times when people aren't as sick that they don't have to stay at home. Unfortunately, it isn't always the case that viruses get less deadly over time. There is always a risk of a more contagious and more deadly virus. The factors that make a virus more contagious are varied. viruses that can reproduce faster and make more of themselves are favored. Those that contain lots of spikes, proteins, which attach to human cells and start the process of getting the virus into the cells, are also more likely to spread. Getting around your body's immune system, including the potential ability to infect someone who has had COVID before or who has been immunized, is another factor that predicts greater infectiousness. Being up to date on the vaccine, using personal protection, especially masks, and staying away from crowds when risk is high remains the best way to avoid infection with SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19.
Mixed signals, new prospect, complicate dreamboat romance. Dear Abby, for Tuesday, March 7th. Dear Abby, recently I have found myself in a difficult spot. My whole life I dreamed about marrying a college football player, and for the past 8 months I've been in a serious relationship with one. Last week he called me and told me we should take a break. Immediately afterward, I have met up with a close friend from high school, and I think I may be developing feelings for him. He doesn't have the great looks my boyfriend has, but he is much kinder to me, and he treats me right. I'm stuck because my boyfriend called me last night saying he wants to talk over dinner, and I think he wants to get back together. Should I stick with my longtime, super good-looking boyfriend, or leave him for a guy I know will treat me right? Hard choice in the West. Dear hard choice, you do not marry an occupation. You marry a person, a handsome partner who distances himself from you 1 week and wants to reconcile the next would make a terrible husband. Take it slow and stick with someone who will treat you right, and you will have a far happier life. Trust me. Dear Abby, I'm 24, married, and have no children. I don't consider myself to be nervous when I'm around children, but when they're in my home or car, shouldn't I be allowed to ask them to stop whatever they're doing wrong without the mother getting upset? My neighbor and I carpool twice a week to our dance workout classes. Her child was topsy-turvy all over the back seat, with her shoes leaving marks on my back window. When I asked the child to please take her feet off the window, her mother, to my surprise, announced that next time she would drive her own car, that she was uncomfortable, and hoped my future children would be perfect. She also remarked that I'm the same way in my home. Abby, was I wrong not to let it go when I was uncomfortable in my car? Soiled in Santa Fe. Dear Soiled, no, you were not wrong. In case you have forgotten, children are required by law to wear seat belts or sit in a car seat when in a moving vehicle. In your car and your home, your rules should prevail. No one should create a mess, and if an accident does happen, the parent should clean it up. The woman overreacted. Mother of the year, she is not. Dear Abby, my 10-year-old daughter is a beautiful girl inside and out. She's caring, loving, and sweet to everyone. My only concern is that she still sleeps in the bed with her mom. While I don't object to this and am willing to sacrifice and sleep elsewhere, should I be concerned about her psychological development? Her daddy in North Carolina. Dear Daddy, most children in our culture have learned to sleep independently by the age of 2. Your daughter should not have displaced you from your marriage bed for the last 10 years, but that is a separate issue. Because you are concerned about whether the sleeping arrangement is damaging to her psychological development, the resource to consult is a licensed child psychologist.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.